You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
And now, I'm joined in the booth by the lovely Eli Graham, who is directing Adeline's Cottage, coming up at the Fringe, and Jordan Wick. Is it Wichman or Wickman? I didn't ask.
It's actually neither. It's Wishman.
Wishman?
German, you know.
Curses. Oh, no, you've got German and you've got the French. Jordan Wichman is directing, here we go, Pas du Toit.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Pas du Toit at, and they're both on at the Allen Hall this Fringe season. And the reason I've got you both on together is partly because I couldn't get home from Laneway last week and I was in all sorts of trouble in the North Island.
But also,
she was great though. She killed it. But I've also got you on together because your shows, along with Harry Almy's version of The Goon Show, are part of a sort of, what do we call it?
We've called it the Steps Beyond season, after the fact that it's a bunch of university students and fresh graduates taking their first steps into the performing arts professional industry.
Fantastic. So, I mean, I love theatre people especially, having each other's backs and bigging each other up and pushing each other's shows. How did you get to know each other? And what's the connection between the shows? And how does Harry come into this?
So I'm their subject tutor in the theatre studies department.
Sure.
And I knew that Harry has done some goon shows before and he was interested in doing his first Fringe. Eli workshopped the Fantastics Adeline's Cottage play by Alex Gordy last semester as part of our lunchtime theatre program, and looking at expanding again, taking that step out, starting Fringe, starting a career. And I am very protective over the safety net that we provide our students, just to be able to feel like they can learn and experiment successfully without the necessary worry of extreme financial failure, because that's really scary for students. So we've essentially kind of summer schooled almost, yep, a production 101, so they can, we all three of us together can successfully debut our Fringe shows. Which is really, really exciting to be putting more student work out into the community.
That is fantastic because, I mean, you need the help the first few times you do. Because these are professional productions, right? You would consider these?
Yeah, they're full co-ops.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And yeah, money is a terrifying thing for even finance people. For creatives, yeah, it's a nightmare. But the three shows, mm-hmm, they're part of a season together, but they all seem very tonally different. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for sure. I think it sort of exists on a bit of a gradient or
so. Sure. I kind of thought that as well when I was looking at them. There's really dark to really funny and maybe one in the middle.
Because Harry's show comes up first, his is pure hilarity the whole way through. Adeline's Cottage sort of follows that and it's a lot funnier than I thought it was. The first time I saw audiences react to it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is actually quite a funny show. But it does get darker, and then you finish up with Pas du Toit, which is...
See, I had them the other way around.
Moments, yeah.
I thought Pas du Toit would be the one in the middle, and because Adeline's Cottage reads as, you know, it's on grief, on mourning, you know, which can be funny.
I was going to say, we sort of try to find those balances of humour in there.
Because, you don't want to just... You don't want to dour a thing that just pushes people down while they watch it.
Yeah, cool. We don't want audiences walking out being like, wow, that was a bummer.
Ooh. We just got on to it. I was just reading the question. The content of the plays, do they affect your rehearsals at all? Like, what are the moods going into the rehearsals? What are the moods coming out of the rehearsals? How do you keep people uplifted when you're doing work like this?
For me, Adeline's was my first time directing, so I was very, very nervous bringing three people that I didn't know if they knew each other into the room together as well, and two of the characters are siblings, so that was like a huge thing for me to foster that sort of sibling banter between them. And then by the time the shows came around, you know, there was that playful energy in the rehearsal room enough that they were bickering with each other all the time and stuff, and people were like, wow, you really picked good siblings. So I think, yeah, it is sort of like a family dynamic in our rehearsal rooms for that reason.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'd say it's very similar in patois. Rehearsing kind of feels like you've transported yourself into the middle of like the sisterhood of Traveling Pants or something.
Awesome.
We've just actually had a rehearsal, and I'll be going back to a rehearsal after this. But I think we might have spent half an hour out of our 2 hours in absolute hysterics, rolling around the floor and laughing till we cried. There's a really funny video in our group chat of me crying in fetal position mid-existential crisis at the beginning of rehearsal. So you know we're off to a great start.
I was going
to
say that's the mark of a good rehearsal time.
Oh, absolutely.
you want art that's going to put you in the fetal position, right?
Like, exactly. But yeah, it's especially for any sort of show that has any sort of content that is darker or could potentially be more triggering or more effective. For us, it's making sure that when we go to ask someone to act for us, we're very forthcoming with the fact, hey, this is the situation, this is what happens, this is what you'll be doing. Just making sure that there's consent like that off the bat.
Sure.
But also having just good processes at the beginning and end of rehearsal, just so that way everybody can go into it and put their work hat on, and then when they take their work hat off, they're not taking anything heavy out of the room with them either.
Sure. What? So they are kind of heavy scripts. What would you say attracted you to each script in the first place?
I was really lucky. I got to see Adeline's Cottage sort of come into existence because me and my friend Alex, who wrote the show, kind of became really close friends through a script writing class.
Awesome.
And so he was showing me these little scenes and he was pitching the show, Adeline's Cottage, to me. And I was like, that sounds so up my alley. I was writing something similar about grief at the same time. And so we had these little like study sessions. And I kind of saw what Adeline's Cottage could become. And so I like hit him up and I was like, you have to make this a bigger thing. Like, we need to do this.
So then did you ask to direct or did he sort of?
I did. Yeah. I said, if you want to work on the script more, I'd love to get attached to it. This is the sort of deadlines we'd be working with. Are you interested? And he fully dove into it, which I'm very grateful for.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So patois, I believe, was written at the same time in the same class as Eli and Alex, but I am removed from that situation. I was not in said class.
Sure.
I was emailed the play by our theatre manager who curates the lunchtime theatre season because it was submitted for performance without a director. And he read it and was like, you know, Jordan needs to direct this. So he emailed it to me and he's like, you know, just in case you decide to come out of your so-called retirement at the right age of 27. And I read it and the two big things that drew me to it is about ballerinas and dance. And as a BPA, that is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I've been training in for a very long time. But also the depth of the different like concepts that the script talks about. Like, I think that there's so many interesting little bits that even though it's set in 1860 and reflects that society, there's so many little bits and pieces that can be completely just translated to things that are happening in today's society. And I think like kind of looking at how they contrast and compare and what we can take from that and learn from that is really, really interesting.
Awesome. I wanted to talk about the dance specifically because dancers, obviously, they're ballerinas in the show and I won't spoil too much. Obviously, I only know what's on the blurb, so technically I can't spoil too much. But the ballerinas in the show and there's a lot of, I mean, it mentions Degas paintings being the background and it mentions Tchaikovsky being the soundtrack. That's classical kind of stuff. What was it like working with, like, do you have, there's no copyright on any of that?
No, because all of it is older than 100 years, so it's within the Creative Commons. Or we have found recordings and copies of things that we are using that are definitely out of Creative Commons. Being very, very careful, not all Tchaikovsky.
But
we've found a whole bunch of older, backdated stuff. So the research project process for putting together the design of the show was definitely intriguing. But it, I think it looks absolutely incredible, and I really hope people come and see our fun painting projections and appreciate the Swan Lake and the shadow puppetry that we have within the projections. Yeah, it's very, very cool. So
yeah, I was gonna mention the shadows as well, because they're you've got like a shadow screen type.
Yeah, so none of my three actors are ballerina, like do ballet. Well, they used to do dance training when they were little, as so many young girls do.
Sure.
But none of them are like ballerinas. So whenever they're on stage and talking about themselves dancing, we actually have an actual ballerina who's behind a shadow screen and doing ballet in a shadow puppet-esque way. So
very
you can
cool.
see the girls internally monologuing while the dance is happening external to them. Yeah, because I don't think I'd ever want to make anyone try to give a speech while doing pirouettes, because that's just bullying.
Does the dancer have to embody three... Does the dancer try embody three different...
They've got three different sets of choreography to reflect each of the three performers. But the great thing about it being behind a shadow screen is we don't need to have three separate dancers. We can just have the one doing all three choreographies, which saves me a lot in paying people. So I'm really not complaining.
Yeah. I tell you what, they're probably the most well-paid artists, or certainly at one point in history, they were definitely the most well-paid artists in the world.
Yeah,
ballerinas.
Interestingly enough, definitely not during the period in which this play happens.
I saw that, and the thing where you were like, they were the rats.
Yeah, because you were just finding ballerinas a dime a dozen everywhere. They were probably, if I was to compare what they do to like today's society, they're essentially strippers.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to think about when you think about a pretty ballerina in a tutu. But, like, I mean, if that's what worked in the 1860s, then more power to them.
Mm. And, you know, things change, and our perceptions of professions change a lot. And then Adeline's Cottage is set in Wellington. So
yes.
it's a New Zealand play, and a lot of modern New Zealand plays that we write aren't set in New Zealand.
Yeah.
What was the feeling like? Is it nice to tackle something that where they can just use their own accents and it feels like it's, you know, super in the right place?
Yeah, that definitely does feel like such a relief. And it's kind of nice to see stuff that just represents
absolutely.
Ordinary people you see around you all the time. And I think there's something really interesting. I'm trying not to spoil too much, but the show does get a bit supernatural at points. And so taking New Zealand bush and this place that is a little bit scary, a little bit spooky, and something that we've all had encounters with and probably have a strange story to tell about it, and setting it in like very rural Wellington, I think is something even if you're not from Wellington, you can really picture the space that surrounds it when we can only capture so much on stage.
And is it the New Zealand sort of grief? Is it a different sort of grief? You know how, like, Europeans will have a rather dramatic and, you know, involved grief, but we often, you know, push it aside and we're very small
Definitely.
About it. How do we deal with it? And is it different in the play?
Yeah, I think we get two very opposing sides on how you deal with grief, because there's Henry, who is the main character, who is very stick your head in the sand, get on with things, you know, I'll deal with it when I have time for it. And you never have time for it. And so he's leading us through his refusal to grieve. But we get these flashback sequences with his sister, Adeline, where she kind of does the opposite thing, and it also harms her, where she throws herself into grief. She visits her mum's cottage as soon as her mum has passed away and is just surrounded and isolated by this grief. And it's kind of comparing both of these methods and seeing how neither of them are benefiting either of these people.
And so that's interesting, because in my head, it was Adeline who died.
She has died.
Okay.
So it's sort of a bit of a reflection. There's this backstory that their mum has passed away, and you get a little bit of a flashback of what their life looked like just before then. And so now it's paralleled with Henry coming to his sister's cottage, which was once their mother's cottage. So it's sort of this generational thing. But yeah, it's quite interesting playing with how Henry is completely different, but they're going through the exact same things.
Sure. And I obviously I don't want to spoil too much because they're both short, sharp shows, you'd say. They're both coming just under an hour long.
Yeah.
How was that? How was it directing a show? Because, you know, a lot of mainline theatre shows run the 90 minutes, you know, feature film length. Is there benefits to a shorter show? Are there drawbacks to a shorter show?
I think it's a balance of both. Like, it's just like its totally own medium for me. Because you get this intimacy of knowing you're only going to be with these characters for a little while. So it's quite interesting to play up how I can get one character starting at, like, complete, like, ignorance and refusing to grieve, and by the end take him to somewhere completely different, I think is, it sort of concentrates the power of the emotions, which I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, it's super contextual as well, because, like, different people consume different types of media. For some people, a short 40-minute show is probably, like, their max, you know, like thinking something a little bit more episodic, something easy to watch, rather than a full night at the theatre where you can expect to be there for 2.5 hours plus an intermission.
Sure.
And especially during Fringe, like, we've got over 90 different acts and artists and things to do this Fringe, and the beautiful thing about the Dunedin community is everyone wants to try to consume as much of that as possible, because it is such an amazing festival to be able to have. Yeah, so for us, being able to hit those slightly shorter shows as well means that we can hopefully get more people through, but also share that audience with other artists. Like, we're not taking away an entire night from someone where they could go and watch 3 or 4 shows in the one night. So just thinking about the whole sharing is caring dynamic with it, while making it manageable for casts of students and recent graduates to be able to rehearse and perform and without having to, like, jeopardize their day jobs.
I know it's I've directed stuff myself that is, you know, semi-professional theater, and you always do want to say to people, you're like, I hate that you have a job. I love to do this for 6 hours a day and take all your time and, you know, workshop this to its shining.
Yeah.
But it is hard, you know, it is hard when people have jobs. They have places to be and friends and things like that.
Illegal.
How dare they? Everything is in the rehearsal room. So yourselves and many of your crew and cast graduated theatre students. We're on student radio now. Is there any advice that you would give to, obviously, some first years would have just come on, or people that are just about to graduate, in terms of how to appreciate the theatre degree while they're doing it, and then how to move forward into trying to make it a profession after they come out?
I mean, for me, looking back, one of the promises I made to myself in first year was that I wasn't going to be scared of just going out and doing stuff, because a lot of high school I had spent sitting around being like, oh, I'm not going to audition for this thing because I can't see, like, myself in any of these roles. So I'm just not going to do it, even though that is 100% a casting director's decision, not mine. So one of the rules I made was, I'm just going to try. And that was, like, one of the most beneficial things for me. Like, I got to do a lunchtime theatre my first semester of first year, and that was awesome. Like, and even if you're not in them, like, coming to see them, getting to know people and coming along to all of the things gives you such a good network of people.
Networking doesn't have to be scary, and particularly in a creative industry, it should be fun.
Yeah.
It should be nice people.
And just get out and do it. Like, it's so worth it.
I think what I have to add onto that is, especially while you are a student, all of our teachers and lecturers are professional actors and directors and artists in themselves, and they're here to share that knowledge with us. So it's like not being scared and using them as a resource, because at the end of the day, they, and I guess I can say this, like, regardless what university department you're talking about, like, the lecturers are there to help you succeed, and they want you to succeed, and they want you to learn and grow. So just not being afraid to utilize that resource, but also just in general, like, the way a theatre degree works, I feel like the biggest thing that we get to take away from that is that sense of communication with others. I mean, I'm not working full-time in the arts industry. That's incredibly hard to do in New Zealand. I'm actually a bookie at the TAB, sure, of all things. But hey, that is working in the entertainment industry when you think about
there's,
it.
There's connections
but
there,
it's,
for sure.
It's, yeah, it's being able to connect with people and have those conversations and to think critically of society and texts and just everything in general. Yeah, and just to generally realise and push the fact that the arts is such a core part of society as a whole, and being able to be a part of that and protect that and create is just so amazing to be able to go out there and do just every day in general life.
Yeah, and the other thing, like, the theatre kids can be scary, but the times that we get people from other, like, I don't know what you call it, disciplines, is great. We love having people. If you have, you know, most lunchtime theatres are only a few hours of rehearsal a week. If you have that time to spare, come audition for things, like follow the Allen Hall pages so you know when auditions are happening, because we always love to see new people coming through. You don't have to be a performing arts kid.
Yeah. No, you might be the next Harrison Ford, or I'm trying to think of other notable ones who came from something else. But, you know, he was a carpenter.
Yeah.
And it turned out he was not that good at acting, actually, but he turned out to be Han Solo.
So. Yeah, there was Star Wars, and that's enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And we get all, like, the law students and some of the first-year health sci's that just want to try something out, and
they have
so much fun.
I legitimately would say that coming and even just doing our audition process for funsies, if you are a law student or a med student, is really beneficial for your practice, because that way you're getting used to communicating and talking to the everyday person who doesn't understand jargon or anything like that. So you can just make new friends. It's a complete extracurricular, no pressure environment. And there's just so much, like, little life things that you can take away from it. That's pretty cool. So
it's a practice of being present with someone. Like, when we did Meisner work in theatre studies, I was like, everyone should do this. Just as, like, social therapy, you know, just have to sit there and look into someone's eyes. It's pleasant. It's nice to be with people and really try and be with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the art of having a conversation is something that definitely gets lost nowadays via texting and messaging. And, I mean, I'm a criminal for it myself. I can't read a message unless it has at least one emoji in it, because I don't know the tone of voice they're talking in. And it's stressful, okay?
Yeah.
You have to know someone really well to read a sentence with a full stop in it.
Oh my God, yeah.
And that's just the great thing about theatre studies, is it teaches you to not be afraid of that, which is a definite skill nowadays, I feel, for sure.
I guess as a last thing, do your individual elevator... I shouldn't say elevator pitch, because that's a horrible business term, but do your individual pitch for who you think is going to enjoy these shows and who should come along.
Yeah, Adeline's is very much for everyone. There is a little note about, like, it does deal with grief. So if that's something that you're not comfortable with seeing 40 minutes of discussion on, like, it's not the one for you. But it's, I think, good from teenagers up. I think a young audience can really enjoy it. It's playful. It's got silly jokes in there. There's some good humour that comes out of it and some absurd characters. So if you like things that sort of challenge the human experience and what it means to be a person in this world, whilst also having a laugh at the same time, I think that's the show for you.
Yeah, I'd say that Part of Toi sits in a similar age bracket. I've kind of pushed it to be a little bit more on the 14+. There is a scene that directly does allude to sexual assault, but nothing is really said or shown. It's just a more of a contextual allusion to it, which is appropriate for the time. It's a show about female friendship, but also the layers that come within that, for sure. Anybody who is really interested in, I'd say, gender studies or psychology or the performing arts would be really, really interested in this show. Or anyone who's just into a really good, like, gossipy drama, almost reality show-esque at times.
Sure.
There is a really solid slap right in the middle of the play.
Oh, fantastic.
So if you want to see a little bit of girl-on-girl action, we've got that too.
The cat fights.
The cat fights. But yeah, it's just a beautiful story about the nuances of friendships gained, friendships lost, just that kind of journey and being a young adult and in a transitional period. So I'd definitely say it's for anybody who has an interest in history and, yeah, just anything really, to be honest. I know it's very, very hard to put into words, I feel, because there's just so much going on with it.
Also, if you like the technological side of it, both of them have a strong combination of set, lighting, sound to create an experience.
Yeah, I'd say both are very, like, full embodiment experiences. Yeah. Like, it's not just a visual thing. It's like you're so present in the space, which makes it really interesting as well. So,
awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Eli and Jordan. No one knows this, and I'm going to tell them it, even though we're on the radio. I looked at the wrong one when I said your names just then.
It's all right. We are one symbiotic person at this point.
Yeah.
Join at the hip.
We're G-Li.
Awful.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. And your shows are on 19th to 21st of March at the Allen Hall. I was about to call it the Allen Theatre. The Allen Hall Theatre, which is on campus here. For the Fringe, tickets are on the Fringe website, of course. Concession tickets. These guys are legends. Their concession tickets are $10 for students. Money can't really be an excuse for you at that point. If it can't be an excuse for me, I don't believe it can be an excuse for you. And full price tickets, $20. And is there anything you'd like to say to the beautiful people at home before you leave?
I can't think of anything off the
top
of my head.
Come and support local, honestly. Yeah. Like, and I don't just mean that in terms of art. Like, we've got a great farmers market down here. We've got so many different community theatres, so many little small businesses and artisan groups. Like, especially with everything else going on in the world these days, like, one of the best things we can do to support each other is to support local. Yeah. So come on to Fringe. Come support as many local artists as you can, and just, like, share that experience together, because it's just so unique and, like, such a once-in-a-lifetime... I mean, every Fringe is, even though it happens yearly, is almost a once-in-a-lifetime thing because they're so different from each other. But, yeah, whether it be us or if you're looking after Fringe to stay involved, you've got the Lunchtime Theatre Programme, Globe Theatre, Playhouse Theatre, the Fire Station out in Mosgiel. There's plenty of ways to support and be involved. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're not completely sold yet, there's lots of promotional content going up on Wish Theatre Collective and the aceproductions.nz account. There's some fun, like, scripted content and stuff that's going up there if you need to be sold more on it.
I think that's a perfect way to cap. When we started with the Steps Beyond stuff, we finished with support your local, whether it's art or produce or whatever you happen to be getting.
Like your favourite local radio station, cough cough.
Your favourite local radio station, More FM. No, wait. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.